I'm going to take for the text tonight just a few words from the ninth verse of the 78th Psalm, which says, Ephraim turned back in the day of battle. Ephraim turned back in the day of battle. I'd also like to add to that a statement that was made when David fell into sin just before, well, as he was on his way to falling into sin. And this is the way people do fall into sin. It said, when the kings went forth to battle, when the kings went forth to battle, David was watching Bathsheba. And when the battle was on, he was not in the battle when the kings went forth to battle. And because of that, David fell into sin. Awful, awful sin. Now, Ephraim, to understand the passage in the that Ephraim turned back in the day of battle, to understand that, you have to... And by the way, I'm speaking tonight on the subject, the sins of the summertime. The sins of the summertime. Ephraim's job was guarding the Ark of the Covenant. Now, you understand when I speak to say the Ark of the Covenant, most of you know immediately what I'm talking about. But there are a few of you who don't have any idea what in the world the Ark of the Covenant is. You may think it's a big arch or something somewhere. Many of you are new Christians, so I'll have to be a bit redundant and explain. The Ark of the Covenant was a little piece of furniture. It was not exactly the size, but along the line of this table, this Lord's Supper table here, or the one up there. Maybe, like the pulpit, a piece of furniture in the general size of this pulpit or this table. It was a piece of furniture that was in the holiest room in the tabernacle and later in the temple. The top of that ark was called the mercy seat. And over that mercy seat, there dwelt the presence of God with his people, called the Shekinah glory, a little cloud-like substance, the presence of God with his people. Now, this little piece of furniture was the most sacred piece of furniture in all of Israel. Over this piece of furniture dwelt the presence of God. It always preceded the Israelites as they marched on a journey. If they went into battle, a family called the Kohathites, one of the three families of the tribe of Levi, were discharged with the responsibility of carrying the Ark of the Covenant. They would, the Ark of the Covenant had a ring on each corner, a gold ring on each corner, and there was a stick covered with gold that would go through the Ark of the Covenant, this ring, and this ring, and this little stick over here, through this ring, and this ring. And the Kohathites would carry the Ark of the Covenant on their shoulders, or beside them, as much like two men would carry a stretcher. And so they would. Their job was to carry the Ark of the Covenant. Now, always, every time the Jews went to battle, every place they traveled as a nation, the Ark of the Covenant was to precede them, being carried by the Kohathites. When the Jews, for example, took off from the wilderness after they'd been in Sinai toward the Promised Land, the Ark of the Covenant was out in front of them, carried by the Kohathite family. When they crossed the River Jordan, the Ark of the Covenant went before them, carried by the Kohathite family. When they walked around the city of Jericho 13 times, once a day for 6 days and 7 times on the seventh day, the people of God were preceded by the Ark of the Covenant. When they went down to Ai after they'd conquered the city of Jericho and they lost in that infamous battle of Ai, they lost the battle of Ai, it was because the Ark of the Covenant was not carried before them. They did not think they needed many people of the Ark of the Covenant. Just a handful went down, a skeleton crew went down, and they were put to flight by the armies of Ai, and they lost the battle. Now, the Jews full well knew that God's power and God's blessing rested upon this little piece of furniture. Now, the tribe of Ephraim had been given or discharged with the responsibility of guarding the Ark of the Covenant. They were to guard the Ark of the Covenant for its safety. Now, the Philistines, the arch enemies of Israel, they wanted this ark. Realizing that every time the Israelites had this Ark of the Covenant with them, they were victorious. Every time they did not have this ark with them, they were defeated. The Philistines sought the ark, for they thought the secret of victory lay in this Ark of the Covenant. So, they came and attacked Israel, and they stole or captured the Ark of the Covenant. When they did, some tragic things happened. Now, by the way, the Ephraimites were supposed to guard it. Had they been doing their job, the Ark of the Covenant would not have been stolen. It would not have been captured. But in the time of battle, they turned back. Now, that's the time they were needed the most. Here come the Philistines. They're after this prized possession, the Ark of the Covenant. And it's the time that they were needed the most. This was their job. This was their piece of furniture. They were to walk guard around it. Just like I said to you fellas tonight, fellas, I want you to guard this pulpit. Don't let anybody get this pulpit. Guard this pulpit with your life. And suddenly, there come in some people in the auditorium, and they try to take the pulpit. And you fellas just turn your backs, and you don't fight for it. Your job is to preserve the safety of the pulpit. Then that's what is said about Ephraim. Ephraim turned his back in the day of battle. Now, Ephraim of all... By the way, when the Ark of the Covenant was stolen, taken in battle by the Philistines, there was a great shout in the Philistine camp. Boy, they thought they then had the thing that was going to be the great secret to all future battles and future victories, for they had the Ark of the Covenant. The high priest in that day was named Eli. He was an aged man, nearing the age of 100. When he heard the Ark of the Covenant was taken, he was so grief-stricken that he fell over backwards. He was a blind man. He fell over backwards. He broke his neck and died. He had two sons. One was named Hophni and the other was named Phinehas. Phinehas' wife was expecting a baby. When she heard the Ark of the Covenant was taken, it was such a grief, she was so grief-stricken that she went into premature labor and gave birth prematurely to the baby, and they named the baby Ichabod because the word Ichabod means the glory as departed. Now, how would you like to be named Ichabod? That means for short, they'd call you Icky. And this little fellow was named Ichabod because it means the glory is departed, the ark is gone, the glory of God is gone, the Philistines have taken this precious piece of furniture, and now the glory has departed. Why? All because Ephraim didn't do her job. Why? Because this tribe turns her back in the day of battle. Why? Because a tribe, when the battle time came, they were out doing something else, not fighting the battle, not holding on to their job. Oh, don't misunderstand me. They did their job most of the time, but they were not there when the battle came. 90% of the time, maybe, they did a fabulous job, but they were not there when the battle came. They were not innocent in season, out of season. And when the day of battle came and the enemies came, the tribe of Ephraim failed to guard properly and carefully the Ark of the Covenant, and this prized and treasured possession of Israel was stolen and taken to the Philistine camp. Now, the tribe of Ephraim was no second-rate tribe. In fact, it was the most proud of all the tribes, perhaps. Why? Well, one reason is the tribe of Ephraim was a son of Joseph. Ephraim was a son of Joseph by a Gentile wife, and Ephraim could look back. I preached about Ephraim not long ago on a Sunday morning. Ephraim could look back and say, we descended from Joseph. Joseph was the favored son of Jacob, and we can look back to Joseph. We go, our goes all back to Joseph. Whenever I think about that, I think about Dr. James McGinley. One lady came to him and said, Dr. McGinley, I want you to have you to my home. She's the kind that wore glasses on a stick. And Oliver Green says, no need to wear your glasses on a stick. That's why God gave you these sideboards on your head for us to hold the things up. And So she came to Dr. McGinley and said, would you eat in my home? And Dr. McGinley said, yes. And so this snobbish lady took him to her home. And she said, now I want you to know that all of my furniture goes back to Louis XIV. He said, that ain't nothing, sister. Mine goes back to Sears Roebuck the 15th. And I'll let you sort of think about that for a little while. But Ephraim was very proud because they went back to Joseph the 15th. And they could say, Joseph was our father. Ephraim, the founder of our tribe, was one of the sons of Joseph, Manasseh being the other, a very proud tribe. But that isn't the only right they had to pride. They were also proud because Joshua was of the tribe of Ephraim. And they could say, not only does our ancestry go back to Joseph, but Joshua, our great beloved leader, is from Ephraim, the tribe of Ephraim. Did you know it doesn't matter what kind of background you've got or how important you are, how wonderful you are? Did you know that you cannot be guarding your job when the bad day of battle comes and there's trouble? Ephraim, who would have thought from Ephraim? Why, I'd have thought it had been from Dan or Reuben or other tribes. Who would have thought that Ephraim would have been the guilty ones to have failed in their job to fulfill their job? The day of battle came, and this the proudest of all the tribes, and this the tribe that had the richest heritage of all. But that isn't all about Ephraim. Ephraim was also a very gifted tribe. Israel knew no better archers than those from Ephraim. Israel had no better weapons than those possessed by Ephraim. Ephraim was the strongest of the tribes, one of the biggest of the tribes, one of the most powerful of the tribes. The tribe that had the best heritage, the most proud of all the tribes. And yet, when the day of battle came, Brother Jim, would you take this graph off of me, please, as soon as you can? When the day of battle came, Ephraim was not doing her job. And the Philistines came, and when the Philistines captured the Ark of the Covenant, with that Ark, the power of God did leave Israel. With that Ark, the high priest did die. With that ark, Ichabod was written over the house of Israel because Ephraim turned his back in the day of battle. Now then, when is the day of battle? When does a person need to fight the hardest? When you've got a truce in Vietnam because it's Buddha's birthday? Well, that's a good one, isn't it? Buddha's birthday. Happy birthday to the old boy. Is that the time? Oh, no. If you, listen, suppose in Vietnam, suppose our forces all of a sudden heard from the other side that they're going to launch a tremendous offensive, and word came back that there's going to be an offensive launched in 2 weeks, and that offensive will be by land and by air and by paratrooper and by helicopter, and we'd better gird our forces. That's the time to be busy. That's the time for all of our armies to get together and say, okay, we're going to gird ourselves. The day of battle is coming in 2 weeks. They come and they attack. Let's gird ourselves. Now, the same thing ought to be true in God's family, shouldn't it, and in God's army. All right? May I say this? There is never a time in all the year when Satan launches an attack against the work of God like he does in the summertime. There is not a time of the year when the devil runs as wild as he does in the summertime. Now, I'm telling you that. I'm telling you tonight. If there's going to be an attack by the enemy in Vietnam, it's those who lead should warn the soldiers. Okay, now, men, I'm telling you. Ladies, I'm telling you. Soldiers, I'm telling you. In just about 1 month, less than 1 month, old Lucifer himself is going to turn loose all his weapons. Now then, we must not be like Ephraim and turn back in the day of battle. David did not go forth to war in the times when the kings went forth to battle. He got in trouble. Anybody will get in trouble if they do not stay always in the battle, and especially when the big heat of the battle comes. Listen, I do not care who you are. When you quit going forward and working for God, that's when you stumble into sin. That's when temptation is the greatest. That's when sin looks the prettiest. That's when lust is inside of the most. Why? You're just hanging around. That's one reason why. That you ought to know where your boy and your girl are every hour of every day. I go sometimes maybe to get a hamburger somewhere, a drive-in place, and I see some of our teenagers just hanging around with the crowd, and they're headed for trouble as sure as my name is Jack Hyams. Loitering around these little drive-in places, just hanging around, not doing anything much. Listen, busy people stay out of trouble. My mother used to teach me that an idle mind is the devil's workshop. Stay busy, stay busy, stay busy. And especially when the enemy is about to launch his biggest attack. I've been just sort of mood lately just to attack the devil on the broadside. I don't know. They're still going to have this rock festival out here. If they do, I'm going to have a rock festival right across the street. Really, get ready for it. I'm not going to put up with that kind of trash coming to the city of Hammond unless they hear from righteous people. Now, just get ready for it. If they bring one of those dirty, rotten, sensual, lustful kind of hippie parades into our city and in our area, and we have that thing coming to the city of Hammond, you mark it down. I'm going to crusade, and we're going to get everybody we can in the city of Hammond. We're going to let somebody know that some righteous, decent people live in our city. We're going to have a rock festival. We're going to sing Rock of Ages, and Are You Built on the Rock, and Build It on the Rock, and so forth. Listen to me. I am simply saying, where the devil attacks the hardest, that's where we ought to put our forces. And summertime is coming, and he's launching his attacks. Now tonight, I want to talk with you about what we can look for in the summertime and the temptation. This sermon is not the kind I'd like to preach. I'd love to preach a better sermon, a more tingling sermon, a more interesting sermon, and reveal some new things to you. But it so happens, this is what we've got to have, and every summer or every spring before summer comes, I try to get you ready for the summer, and God help us to do it tonight. Now, what can you expect? What should we look for in the summertime as Satan launches his attack? There are six sins. Now, follow me. There are six sins that will lurk in the shadows to try to cause you to stumble this summer. Number one, inconsistency. Inconsistency. What do I mean? Listen, what I mean. I mean that the best Christians in the church sometimes for 9 months out of the year, the finest folks we have, I mean the Ephraimites with a great heritage, know the Bible, love God, faithful to God, serve God 9 months out of the year. If you don't watch out, you, the best people in this church, we, the best people, will let down the barriers, and Satan will have the victory in the best lives in this church if we are not consistent. Now listen to me. There is nothing that will take the place of consistency in God's service. You've heard me say this again and again. I want, now I never have shouted in this pulpit. I've cried some. I've never shouted. Maybe I should. But if I ever start shouting, it'll be every Sunday. It'll be every Sunday. I want to be somewhat consistent in my preaching. I want a person to be able to come to our church on a given Sunday and get about what he'd get on any other given Sunday. There's no trait quite so important as consistency. Do you know somebody who bubbles part of the time and then the bubble bursts the other part of the time? And you see them, and you expect them to be their usual effervescent self, but the shades have been pulled down and the sun is set, and you think they're mad. You know somebody, you never know how to speak to them. Sometimes they're, hi there, and sometimes, good morning. Sometimes, praise the Lord, I'm saved. Sometimes I just don't feel very good today. God give us consistency. And in the summertime, Satan attacks us with the sin of inconsistency. What do I mean? I mean, some people in this church who would never miss Sunday school on Sunday morning, never miss Sunday morning preaching, never miss Sunday night, never miss Wednesday night, will take a vacation and take that vacation from God. Now listen to me. For your own spiritual benefit and edification and growth, when you're gone away this summer and Sunday morning comes, you get in Sunday school in church. When Sunday night comes, you listen, I hope every person in our church that's traveling on Sunday morning during preaching has a flat tire. And I hope that the spare is not blown up. And I hope all you can do is call somebody, and while you're sitting there waiting for the serviceman to come, have services. Very idea of God's good people driving down the highway on Sunday morning. And then on Sunday night, when time comes, plan your schedule so when time comes for Sunday night, you go to church somewhere. Be faithful. Not because Brother Hiles said it, but because you need to do it. You be faithful to church. Be consistent. Wednesday night comes, find yourself a place to go to a service on Wednesday night. If there's no service on Wednesday night, well, just find yourself. Plan your schedule. So Wednesday night comes, you'll find a place to go. Now, here's what you do. Plan your vacation, if you're going to have one. Plan your vacation, your trip. Maybe some of you are going to have the, as, who was it? Brother, somebody told me that. Oh, Bernie Fields. Very God bless him. He said he had a honeydew vacation. He said, I'm going to have a honeydew vacation this year. And I said, a honeydew vacation? Yes, he said, we're going to have a vacation. And Mrs. Fields says, honeydew this, and honeydew that, and honeydew this, and honeydew that. Now, it may be that you're going to have a honeydew vacation, but if you're not, if you're going to take a trip somewhere, then contact the church office. Call the church office and tell Mrs. O'Brien to check with me about where the churches are in the areas where you're going, where the good churches are. And I'll make a little list up and give you the list, and you can plan your schedule so that every Sunday morning you're in Sunday school and preaching. Every Sunday night you are in preaching. Every Wednesday night you're in service. Consistency. May I say a word now? And I'm sort of talking as the papa to the young'uns, you know, sort of family kind of discussion tonight. Let me say a word to our school teachers. I don't know where you are. Whenever you don't sit in the same spot, I lose you. But that's what I'm preaching about, consistency. see, already Satan is working. School teachers, now it's awfully easy for you to be a good Christian at Hammond Baptist High School. But maybe you're going to go your ways this summer. By the way, if any of you have a hard time, you want to stay in the area and can't find a job, I'd like to know about it. Tell Dr. Billings, he can tell me, and I'll do the best I can to help you find some kind of a job. We have some places shoveling snow this summer and other things. Now, bear in mind this. It'd be easy for you. Now, you have stature now. You were in college maybe just a few years ago, or maybe last year, and suddenly you are now a school teacher. You have some stature. Now, you act like a school teacher when you go home. You're not little Susie or little Junior anymore. You're an adult now. And everywhere you go, you will carry the Hammond Baptist High School name with you. Don't forget who you are. And don't forget whose you are. And if you're going to go home, lay around on a beach half naked all summer, just don't come back and teach next year. And I'm not kidding. That's all you're going to do. Or if that's a part of what you're going to do. You're going to go home and strip half naked, you ladies, and lay around the beach all the time, show your thighs off all summer, then why don't you just get yourself a job teaching in some Episcopalian school somewhere? By the way, you visitors don't like that. You just choke it down the best you can. And Because, now listen, consistency. What you've heard preached from this pulpit and from the chapel and what you taught in the school, live it during the summertime. You represent the First Baptist Church and the Hammond Baptist High School and all we stood for, and you carry our reputation everywhere you go this summer. I'll turn now to the other part of the family, and I'm sure about a dozen of you are glad that I am. I'll turn to the students. It won't be as easy for you to be a good Christian this summer as it was in the school semester. You folks in Hammond Baptist High School. Now, you're going to have to remember the convictions. Nobody's going to be there when you go outside to measure your skirt. Actually, we used to measure the skirt. See, the school has a rule that the skirt has to be so long after you get on your knees. And used to we could measure it with a ruler, one-foot ruler. I saw some skirts this morning. I'm afraid a yardstick wouldn't reach on your knees. But now, don't forget, the same God that leads you and the same decency and the same purity and the same convictions and the same standards are something to live by, whether you're in Hammond Baptist High School or whether you're not in Hammond Baptist High School. So be careful. Consistency. Consistency. The one trait, by the way, on vacation, consistency about your convictions. Whatever it's wrong to do, in case you bumped into Brother Hiles on the street. For example, yesterday I was driving down Fayette Street. We have a rule that it's not enforced, like we're going to start, by the way, that at the rescue mission, nobody can smoke on the property and so forth. And so yesterday I was driving down Fayette, and there's a long line of cars going to turn left. And so I went through the alley. I had no intention of doing it. And I saw you mission men, some of you, smoking cigarettes on mission property. Now, in the first place, I'd like to know where you get the money to buy those cigarettes. And in the second place, next time I drive down through, I'm going to just take every one of you I see smoking cigarettes on our property, and we'll go up and get your clothes, and you're going to be on your way. Now, I'm simply saying this. I'm saying that there ought to be a consistency in the summertime with the convictions of the wintertime. Now, you sit with the house. Why are you so hard? Listen to me. If you would trust me, you've got to stay hard. If you don't stay hard and mean and always be after this and that and this, watch it here, watch it there, get this, salt this. Listen, if you don't stay hard, before you know it, a church like this is gone. It's just gone. That's one reason why that when a young person begins to misbehave, I say, hold it, sit still. You know, that's the best place to stop anarchy. It's the best place to stop it. Recall back yonder one Sunday not long ago, several Sundays we had a group of kids that were misbehaving. And folks kept coming to me and said, Pastor, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? We can't hear back there. And I stopped the service and said, hush. And then that wouldn't work. And went back there one Sunday morning and did an invitation and talked to them. That didn't work. And the next Sunday I said, if you don't behave, you're going to leave the service. Remember that? You'll never forget it. And I said, hey, don't you laugh at me. You, usher, take that teenager out. And now, what happened? Tell you what happened. A couple from our church, a lady from our church without soul winning. There was a middle-aged couple, a fine middle-aged couple, here that morning. And this lady went out soul winning. And these folks were like plucking ripe fruit off the vine. They said they wanted to get saved. They couldn't wait to get saved. One of those cases where I think they called you with a fist and asked you to come out maybe and talk to them. But where they almost wouldn't wait, you got through with the plan. You know, sometimes folks don't want to get saved so fast that you don't get to present your plan. And I said, hold it here. I got a speech I want to make, you know. And they were that kind. And so they told this lady why they wanted to get saved. And she said, why? And they said, because we admired that preacher making that teenager leave. And that's what made us want to get saved. Now, I'm saying this. I'm saying you've got to watch it all the time. All the time. David, a man after God's own heart. David, a man who killed a bear with his bare hands. David, a man who slew a lion. David, a man who killed Goliath with a stone and a slingshot. David, Jesse's finest son, though he didn't know it. David, God's favorite king. David, the greatest king that ever sat on Israel's throne. David, the man after God's own heart, the sweet psalm singer of Israel, fell into sin. Why? Because he didn't go forth to battle. That's why. Undergird yourself for the summertime. Be consistent. By the way, it's wrong to play the slot machines in Hammond. It's wrong to play the slot machines in Las Vegas while you're on vacation. It's wrong to go mixed bathing, and it is. It's wrong to show you for a lady to show her thighs in public. I say it's wrong for a lady to show her thighs in public. I say the Bible says it's wrong for a lady to show her thighs in public. And if it's wrong at a tennis court, it's wrong in a mixed bathing pool. And if it's wrong to go mix bathing in Hammond, it's wrong to go mix bathing on Miami Beach. Now, may I say this? If a family, I mean the immediate family circle, can find a place where there are no other people, there's nothing wrong, as I see it, with finding a spot and going swimming. Now, like the old swimming hole we used to have when we were kids. You know, those were the days. Talk about pollution. Good night. Cedar Lake out here is 7-Up compared to what we swam in. The old swimming hole, too. In fact, many times I've been swimming and a crawdad got me by the big toe. You get a line and I'll get a pole, we'll go down to the crawdad hole, honey, baby mine. And we got some other hillbillies here. Anyway, there was times of that we can't sing anymore, we call the Supreme Court. But anyway, there's a lot of hillbillies here tonight, I see. Welcome. But the old swimming hole. Now, I'm saying there's nothing wrong with a family finding a private spot, nothing wrong with you having a swimming pool in your backyard, but there is something wrong with a lady showing her thighs to somebody who's not her own. Now, that's wrong. The Bible said it's wrong. You want to know why? You say, preacher, show me. I'm so glad you brought that up. I was afraid you wouldn't. When Paul wrote to Timothy and said that let the ladies be adorned with modest apparel, there were only two types of apparel they had in those days. One was called the stola, and one was called the stole, and I won't go into that. But the only difference between women's dress in those days was the long flowing robe of the wicked woman had a slit in the side that showed her thigh. That was the only difference. One day, did I do that here, or was that at Miller Road? I'll never forget it. I clothed Jim Lyons in a stola. And we went through this, and I actually showed him. We made one. I may do that for Dr. Billings sometime and show you. But we made one, a stola. And we showed, actually had a little deal. I wouldn't do it to a lady because it'd be wrong or to show her thighs. But believe me, Jim Lyons' thighs did not, were a little nauseating. But Jim Lyons came and modeled one of these. Now, the only difference in, when Paul said in modest apparel, the only thing he could have meant was, sew that slit up down beside your dress so your thigh won't stick out. That's the only thing he could have meant. That's all he could have meant. Now, I'm saying it's wrong to do that in Hammond. It's wrong to do that on Miami Beach. It's wrong to gamble in Hammond. It's wrong to gamble in Salt Lake City. By the way, if it's wrong to gamble in Salt Lake City, it's wrong to gamble at All Saints Church down here, too, or any other church. Consistency. Consistency. And that's one of the sins. By the way, I better get off of that one. I've got a whole point under on dress, and I've already paid my respects to that. Oh, but you know, that's where the North and the South differs. The North, they believe it's okay. They're against smoking. The Christians in the North are against smoking, but they're for mixed bathing. But down the South, they're against mixed bathing, but they're for smoking. I'm not talking about the North, the South, the East, or the West. I'm talking about decency, and God's against both of them. You say, I don't see it that way. You ask any red-blooded man who tells the truth, and he'll tell you how you ought to see it. It's no surprise that this generation of mini-skirted little Jezebels flitting around here showing their legs off. No surprise that same generation has no morals, no decency. It's no surprise that the airline stewardesses of the American Airlines are demonstrating now wanting maternity benefits for single girls. Listen, lewdness and nudeness always go together. Always go together. Now, you think this, I'll be down there after a while, this next point. But the second sin of the summer. Now, first is inconsistency. The second is unfaithfulness. Unfaithfulness. There is a definite tendency in the summertime for us not to be as faithful as we are the other 9 months of the year. Don't yield this year. Don't succumb to Satan's wiles. Be faithful. Decide tonight that you're going to live this summer by the same convictions you've lived the last 9 months, and also you're going to be as faithful to God's house. Now listen to me. Your church needs you in the summertime. I say this every year, and I say it sincerely, honestly, and advisedly, for your sake as well as for our church's sake. If you have a two-week vacation, leave on Monday and come back on Saturday and only be gone one Sunday from the church, there is a definite parallel between the love of one's church. Now, you say, well, how's we're going to leave on Saturday and come back on Sunday night late, and most of you will be driving on Sunday night too. But now, for your own sake, look, you need to be here every time you can. I mean, right here. For example, did you know if you were out tonight somewhere else? Now, I'm not against you visiting other churches if you want to. But I think you'll be healthier if you eat the same table regularly. Nobody is going to be as healthy eating in a different restaurant every meal as he is eating Mama's cooking at the table regularly, where she prepares liver and onions tonight and ground beef tonight and beans and taters tomorrow night and salad the next night and so forth. Now, if you were not here tonight, many of folks tonight not here will not hear the sermon, and they will pay for it. I don't mean I'm going to make them pay for it. I mean they will in their spiritual lives. They'll pay for it. Be faithful. Decide now. I'm going to be in Sunday school every Sunday morning this summer. I'll be in preaching every Sunday morning this summer. I'll be in church every Sunday night this summer. I'll be in church every Wednesday night this summer. I'll be faithful. I'll be faithful to God's church. Faithfulness. Number three, the sin that lurks in the shadows to every Christian in the summertime is the sin of stealing. Stealing. Stealing God's money. One night I went home. There were police cars all out in front of my house in our area. And I found out that right next door to us, the doctor lives, and they had broken in and robbed the doctor's home. Then the snow was on the ground. They traced the footprints of the robber over to our house. And that night, I slept with a gun beside my bed all night. You say, oh, I thought you was a preacher. Yeah, I'm a pistol-packing preacher. You say, what would you do if somebody tried to break in your house? I'd shoot him right in a gizzard. That's what I'd do. And God wouldn't be against it. This generation of ours that takes the part of the criminal in the place of the attack. Right over here in Iowa, a fella started robbing a guy's farmhouse, and the fella shot him. And they indicted the farmer instead of the robber. I mean, that happened. I'd like to shoot the judge. Anyway, through our area, we got a little concerned about folks breaking and robbing. One of our fine families in the church here, faithful workers, they were robbed, and they talked to me about it and got concerned. And one of our staff members' house was robbed, and so forth. And Dr. Billings, your house was robbed, and I am concerned. And we all decided that they said probably it's a bunch of hippies. They're trying to get some stuff to buy dope with. Now we'll make my statement. I have more respect for those hippies than for you folks that didn't tithe today. You hear what I said? I have more respect for the fellows who came to your house because you came to God's house and robbed. Yeah. You're a robber. Thief. I mean a thief like these fellows, these hippies. I mean a robber. Yeah. I mean, you break in somebody's house, and the God who loves you, and the God who gave His Son, and the God who gives you all you have, and the God of all blessings, you dare to rob from Him, you crook, you. Yeah. Now, may I say this, most of you tithe, and those of you that don't, you're dishonest. God has given you a sacred trust, and you've not kept it, you've robbed from God. You say, I can't afford to tithe, it's not your money, it's God's money. You have no more right to steal from me to pay your bills than you do to steal from God to pay your bills. But now the temptation is doubly strong in the summertime. Why? Well, Junior is going to take a trip to South America, and Susie's going to take a trip to California, and we're going to take a family vacation to, but after Susie and Junior go, you'll probably go to Hobart. But you're going to take a, and before you know it, you say, well, we'll get caught up in the fall. Well, suppose I went down to the Cayman National Bank, stuck a gun in the rib of the teller there, and I said, give me 10,000. I'll get caught up in the fall. You know, I think they'd look with disfavor toward that kind of transaction. And so does God. You decide right now that every time you get a dollar, summer, winter, spring, fall, God gets a dime of it. It's His. There's a danger. May I say a word here? Two. I would not say that it's unscriptural for a person to designate his tithes. I've practiced storehouse tithing since I got saved as a boy, almost 11 years of age. I personally would never give my tithe to any institution other than a New Testament church. And I would never give it to anything other than undesignated, so a portion of my tithe would go to every phase and facet of the church program. My hearty recommendation is that you not give your tithe designated to the... And I'm not scolding you. If you do it, I won't get mad at you. First place, I won't even know it. But if I knew it, I wouldn't get mad at you. If you want to give your tithe to the sword of the Lord, that's okay with me. I personally would not do so. I personally have given my tithe to the church. Why? Because this church, let me go further. If you want to give your tithe to Brother Roloff, if you want to give your tithe to Dr. McIntyre, if you want to give your tithe to our broadcast here, I personally would not advise you to do it. I think the best thing to do is give your tithe to a church that where the money is sent to all different places. Now, for example, a person can say, okay, I'm going to give my tithe to the radio ministry. In a case like that, you're forsaking our missionaries. You see, if you give your tithe to radio ministry, then you're saying to all of our missionaries, you folks can just starve to death as far as I'm concerned. You see, now misunderstand me. I'm not criticizing. If you want to do it, that's your business. You're a priest of God and have a right to do what you think God wants you to do. I'm not your pope. I'm not your boss. I'm just your preacher. And I'm to exhort you and try to help you and advise you personally. I want some of my tithe offering every week to go to Brother Fitz, and some to go to Brother Streeter, and some to go to Dr. Billings, and some to go to the bus ministry, and Brother Beebe, and some to go to the rescue mission, and Brother Colston, and some to go to missionaries, and some to go to this, and some to go to that, and some to go here and yonder. I feel personally that if I were to give my tithe to the bus ministry, I'd say to the mission, I won't support you. If I gave my tithe to the mission, I'd say to the bus ministry, I won't support you. If I said gave my tithe to the radio program, I'd say to the mission and bus ministry, I don't want to support you. Now, you say, Brother Howes, you're trying to get money. No, I'm not. Listen, God knows this is true. If there's one ounce of sincerity in my soul, I have never in my lifetime preached a sermon on giving or said a word about giving in an effort to try to get anybody's money. I want you to be mature Christians. I want you to grow in grace. I want you to arrive to the place where you're mature and enjoy the fullness of God and the great blessings of God. And I want you to grow in the grace of giving. And so I admonish you, give your tithe. I suggest to you that you give it to a soul-winning, Bible-preaching church. Now, if you want to give more than the tithe, then you can give it something. By the way, again, I say, if somebody walks up to me and says, here's my tithe, I want to give it to the high school, I'll take it and shake your hand and say, God bless you. I'm not your God and I'm not your Pope. But my suggestion is for you to get the biggest rewards in heaven that you give your tithe to a Bible-preaching church. Now then, be careful about summertime. Now, how can you do it? Okay, here's the way you do it. This summer, you be sure before you leave, your tithe is paid for the entire trip. Before you leave. You be sure that before you ever take off for a Sunday, I mean one Sunday, pay your tithe before you go, not when you get back. I got a sneaking suspicion it won't get paid till the fall, and maybe not at all. Now, you say, Brother Howes, you're trying to keep the offerings up. No, listen. We can get together and cut our budget a lot easier than I can afford to lose you being the kind of Christian you ought to be. I'd preach the same sermon to our primaries, and I am. Same sermon to a six-year-old child that gets a dime a week, let God have a penny, and I'd suggest you put that penny in the church budget. You see. Now, you think that's going to make me rich? No. But I'd preach it just as strongly to that primary child who gets a dime a week as to that man who gets $1,000 a week. And by the way, I'd like to see him after the service. Please. The fourth temptation of the summer is, and I'll have to say a few more words about it, and that is dress. Dress. There's no season of the year that tempts people to dress immodestly like the summertime. That's one of the finest things, Brother Hilton, about pastoring in this area. We don't have many seasons where you can wear, not many clothes. Good night, usually, how much can we get on and how much can we take off? But though it is getting worse, I saw a female crossing, and you can't be sure about that anymore, but I saw something crossing the bridge out here on Columbia over the expressway, had a fur coat, a chubby fur coat, pulled around like this, and not a thing from the top of her thighs down. I mean, I froze just looking. Not long. I didn't look long. I don't mean I froze like this. Well, that'll be over town by morning, I'll tell you for sure. I don't mean the kind of freezing that Brother Fist does. I mean the kind of freezing, cold freezing. And by the way, that leads me to this, and since we're just talking as a family tonight, that leads me to this. Fellas, may I say, I know it's hard for fellas to keep their minds clean and pure. I know that's true. Now, one of the best things to do, fellas, is stay busy. And another thing is, don't, when you see ladies improperly dressed, or females improperly dressed, be careful. Don't dwell. I'm serious now. Don't dwell. Look away. Get your mind off of it. This is strange. A Negro man, this happened, he was a Negro, could have happened to a white man, has. But a Negro man was tried and condemned to the electric chair because he raped somebody. And I think he ought to be. I mean it. I think that rape ought to be capital punishment offense. But before he died, he said, it's not really fair. He said, I ride the bus to work every morning. And he said, right before me on the bus, he said, there is a picture of a lady, a woman, almost half naked. And he said, people sit beside me on the bus and their skirts up to their laps. And he said, I pick up my newspaper and there are movie ads. I drive down the street and there are billboards. I pick up a magazine and there are advertisements. I turn my television on and there's lewdness. And he said, the truth is, I just got so stirred in my passions until I committed this crime. Now, he said, I ought to be killed, maybe. But he said, the person that put that sign on the bus ought to be in the next gas chamber, electric chair. And the person that put the female that wore that dress, and I had to look at her legs and her and lust every morning, she ought to be in the next electric chair after I. And he said, the people that made the television programs and the billboards and the movie houses. Now, I don't care who you are. And I defy any normal man to speak against this. I don't care who you are. You can't look at, if you're normal, at unclothed women and dwell on it very long and have a mind that's as clean as it ought to be. It's like that fellow in the yard. A lady walked by, a female walked by half-dressed, and he said, doesn't affect me. And his little daughter said, how come you're watering the side of the house then? Does affect you too. Does affect you too. Ladies, lengthen your skirts. Pardon me. Females, become ladies. Become ladies. But you say it's a sign of the time. I don't care what it is. It's still wrong. But you say, Brother Howes, you lose some members. I'm not here to gain members. I'm here to tell you what's right and try to help you. But you say, Brother Howes, it's just the other churches do it. Well, let the heathen rage. In the summertime, it's a lot worse. Well, you say, for the house, I go to a Christian college. They say it's okay. They got holes in their head, too. And in the first place, they're liars. They know it's not okay. Every man knows it's not okay. Or you might have some effeminate sissies on the faculty that flirt with each other. But I'm talking about real men. There's not a normal, red-blooded American male alive with what knows in his heart what he thinks about when he has to look at the bodies of ladies overly exposed. You say, preach. Once somebody said last night, says it's been a long time since you preached on that subject. I said, okay, just get ready for it for several months. It's been a long time since it was warm enough to take off your clothes too. I used to say, I saw a sign that said ladies' clothing, 1/3 off. I said, no, it's not. It's 2/3 off. Saw a sign that said ladies ready to wear clothing. I said, praise the Lord. It's about time they got ready to wear some clothing. God pity you little Jezebels going around showing your legs to every old man in the neighborhood. Listen, listen, every old lustful beast in the town, some of you, your children, every old lustful beast, white and brown and black and red and yellow in this area can feast his wicked mind and his evil thoughts on the legs of your daughter. You ought to be ashamed of yourself. Summertime's coming. Let's dress properly and let's be careful. Well, you sit with the house, I'm a man, so I'll go, it won't hurt me to go mixed bathing. You're not kidding me. I haven't told this story in a long time, and I want to hear it. I was out soul winning in Garland, Texas one Thursday night, and I was out soul winning, knocked on the house, and a sergeant on the police force in Garland, Texas, 6'4", great big giant of a man, built like that, great big good-looking guy. And I walked in, and so I won his wife to Christ, but I couldn't win him. No, I won him and couldn't win her. So she said, I just don't like your preaching. I went to your church, and she said, oh, you talked about women wearing shorts. And she said, there's nothing wrong with that. And said, you talked about dancing, too. And she said, there's nothing wrong with dancing. What's wrong with dancing? I said, the evil thoughts that men have when their bodies get that close to the body of a lady. And she said, oh, they don't either. And here was this big policeman, great big guy, that much taller than I, great big guy. And she said, they don't either. And I said, they do too. She said, I can prove it. I said, prove it. She said, my husband dances with other women. And he doesn't have evil thoughts when he dances. I said, ask him. She said, do you, George? I said, do you, George? And George went, I said, do you, George? Do you have evil thoughts when you hug? I'm like the old country fellow when they ask him, a little lady stood up and said, you want an answer, big boy? He said, no, let's go hug sitting down. I'd rather hug sitting down. It's hugging. I said, do you, George? And she said, do you, George? And George bowed his head and said, yes, I do. And I admired him because he was an honest man. And every man here that wouldn't answer the same way is either sick or a liar. You say, boy, you're rough. Yeah, I'm rough because somebody needs to get as rough with wrong as this dirty crowd's getting with right. Summertime's coming. Dress properly. Number 5, the devil lurks in the shadows with the sin of irresponsibility. Irresponsibility. First, inconsistency, unfaithfulness, stealing, dress, irresponsibility. You have a job in the church? Summertime, do it the best you can. You know what I think? I think the buses ought to have 2,600 some Sunday in the summertime, too. I think the Sunday school ought to have 5,570 some summer Sunday in the summertime, too. Now, bear in mind, we do have folks on vacations, and any given week, hundreds of our folks are gone. But it ought not to be because we don't do our job. That Sunday school class! You ought to say, I'll do as good a job in the spring, in the summer as I do in the spring and fall and winter. Keep your class up. Why don't you set as your goal for your Sunday school class this summer to have it as high as you had it in the spring? Why don't you set as your goal for your bus route to have it as high as you had it in the spring? Why, when time comes for the kings to go forth to battle, why should Ephraim turn his back in the day of battle? Why shouldn't we say, if the devil's going to launch his attack, if the devil is going to give us more temptation in summertime, we'll work harder, instant in season, out of season, always fervent in spirit, serving the Lord. Sunday school teachers, if you're going to be gone, you give your superintendent plenty of time. Suppose that I am gone some Sunday and nobody showed up. I didn't get anybody to take my place, didn't ask any of these fellows to preach or anybody else to preach. And somebody said, have you seen the pastor? No. And one fella jumped up. St. Louis Schultz jumped up and said, oh, he saw me as he left town. He's going to be gone this weekend. And he wanted you and all saints to go in together and just have one church today. I've got as much right to do that as you do to just not show up for your class so two classes can go in together. First place, I detest two classes going in together. It's a sign of somebody shirking responsibility, either the teacher or the superintendent one. It ought not so to be. Teacher, know when you're going to leave. Get every job that you feel cared for. Whatever your job is in the church, get it cared for. And before you leave, be sure nothing goes unplanned, and everything goes in order, goes well while you're gone. Now may I say this in closing, and that is the sixth temptation is irritation. Irritation. Did you know when the weather gets hot, it's easier to get provoked than it is when the weather is comfortable? Did you know it's harder to pastor a church in July than it is in February? You're too cold to fuss in February. Did you know that people's, in the summertime, people's nerves are on edge more? The heat. Irregular schedule. Now may I say, let each of us say in his own heart that I'm going to do my best to keep my spirit right in the summer. Not easily offended. Psalm 119, 165 says, and this is one of the best verses in all the Bible, great peace have they which love thy law, and nothing shall offend them. Nothing shall offend them. Nothing shall offend them. People oftentimes come to me and say, Brother Hiles, did you get offended that dirty, nasty remark with a fist said about you? Well, not oftentimes. David came once. But anyway, nothing shall offend them. But Brother Hiles, you know what she did. Great peace have they which love thy law, and nothing shall offend them. But Brother Hiles, I'll tell you what, she got to sing the solo, and she just warbles and hollers, and I've heard folks call hogs in Arkansas that can beat her. Great peace have they which love thy law, and nothing shall offend them. But I saw Dr. Billings on the street, and he didn't speak to me. Great peace have they which love thy law, and nothing shall offend them. But out in the school, one of those teachers spanked my kid. Great peace have they which love thy law, and nothing shall offend them. But Brother Beebe didn't treat me right on my bus route. Great peace have they which love thy law, and nothing shall offend them. Brother Hiles called my son down, my junior down in church one more night, and he pointed to him and said, you in the striped shirt. Great peace have they which love thy law, and nothing shall offend them. Well, I know how the preacher preached about that mixed bathing. He passed by and saw me mixed bathing the other day. Great peace have they which love thy law, and nothing shall offend them. Nothing. Nothing. People that love the law of God, people that love the Word of God, aren't easily offended. That's one reason why, that if we keep in love with the Word of God and meditate in it and read it and memorize it and love it, we'll not be easily offended. So in the summertime, be careful about your temper. Did you know if you don't watch out, you'll be on the outs with your family in the summertime, and you'll fuss when you shouldn't fuss. And before you know it, folks in the church won't speak to each other, or they'll speak in a way to be better if they didn't. And before you know it, there's a little friction here. And did you know, for every one person that comes to me between September and May, saying, Brother Hiles, there's somebody in this church that has done me wrong. For every one person that does that between September and May, a half a dozen will do it in June, July, and August. You know why? Because when it's hot, it's easy to be offended. You've been cooking over a hot stove, and the husband comes in 30 minutes late, and you've worked all day. You've got cornbread, and you've got beans, and you've got squash and okra and turnip greens and all the basic food that normal people ought to eat. God pity you heathen. And he comes in, and you say, least you can do is call. Well, I did call. I said, Nary! She said, that does it. He throws a ladle down in the soup, and soup goes all over everywhere. Great peace have they which love thy law, and nothing shall offend them. What should you say? In love and kindness, hit him. As the Quaker said, I would not hurt thee. I would do thee no ill. I would not lift up my hand to harm thee, but thou art standing where I'm about to shoot. Now summertime is coming. Let's don't lose the ground we've made. Let's don't lose the progress. Our church is right today at the best place it's ever been in all its life. Did you know in the first 4 months, the first one-third of this year, we baptized just a few short of 900 people? Did you know, I'm wondering, I don't think, there may be one or two other churches in the world that will baptize 900 all year. Last year we averaged over 120 people a Sunday coming forward receiving Christ. Did you know that in the last several months we've averaged over 150 people a Sunday walking these aisles? Our Sunday school is averaging hundreds more than it did a year ago. we have a new high school and an elementary school coming on, and we're going to build a home or a apartment building for senior citizens, and we hope within a few years to have a college opened here. And God, and we hope to have in 5 years 10,000 in Sunday school. We're turning out more preachers than any church in America, having more people saved than any church in America. But did you know the higher you get, the more careful you have to be or you'll stumble? And so let's be careful. As a pastor, I hate to see summer come. I hate to see it come. And that's why I want to warn you. These six temptations, inconsistency. Now let me just list them, and we're through. Decide that you're going to be consistent and you're going to be just as convicted and just as faithful and just as loyal in everything during the 3 months of summer as you are during the other 9 months. Number two, be faithful. Decide that every Sunday this summer and every Wednesday night this summer, you're going to be in God's house when time comes. Next, don't rob God. Decide that you're going to give God 10% of everything God gives you, of all your increase, and you're going to do it the first fruits. You're going to do it Sunday after Sunday. If you're going to be gone on Sunday, you're going to do it before you go. Decide it tonight. And decide tonight that you're going to dress modestly, ladies. Modestly. Men, decide you're going to keep pure minds and refrain from looking at things that would cause you to have evil thoughts. And then responsibility. Decide that you're going to be responsible this summer. That you'll be in your place. And if you can't be in your place to fill your job, you'll have adequate replacements to do so. And then decide that you're going to ask God not to make you irritable this summer. If you'll avoid these six sins, if we can avoid these six sins to the utmost, we will preserve the great fruit of the spring. And we can build next fall on our labors of the spring, rather than having to rebuild what's been torn down because the summer found us turning back in the day of battle. Let us bow for prayer, please.